Welcome to The Road Back to Life with Ashley and Don, a program brought to you by patients for patients with kidney disease and their families. Hosted by The Road Back to Life, a mentoring group for kidney patients. For more information on The Road Back to Life, visit us at theroadbacktolife.com. Now, here's your hosts, Ashley and Don.
So thank you for joining us today on our show. We're going to have kind of a roundtable discussion. So it's me, Ashley, here on Camino Island in Washington, and we have Bob, who's our executive director of The Road Back to Life, joining us today. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Thank you for inviting me.
And then, of course, we have Don, who is over in Colorado Springs, Colorado. How's it going, Don?
Well, it's going great. It really is. And thank you for inviting me. Oh, that was Bob's line, wasn't it? Yeah. No, we're doing well here. Just loving it. And I'm looking forward to talking about this subject here. You want to tell us what it's about?
Yes, I do. And I just want to say that we're so thankful for technology that we can keep doing these podcasts while being in our homes safely. And I'm grateful for that. So thanks you guys for being here. I'm glad that we can do this. And today we are going to talk about not planning your life around kidney failure and dialysis. So knowing that you still have a life to live and you can still do the things that you enjoy. So Bob, do you want to start us off with that and kind of talk about how you didn't let kidney failure take over your life?
I would love to, and thank you for inviting me into this conversation, you guys. My story, I think I've shared with you guys before, but I had a lifetime to get used to the idea of kidney failure. I was diagnosed at 12 with polycystic kidney disease. So I made a conscious decision early in my life to not let it direct my life. I wanted to make sure that I lived. You know, you can live in fear, but you don't have to. So actually, I took this as an opportunity to take control of my life because I didn't know how long I was going to live. When I was 12, when I was diagnosed, that was in 1970. So in 1970, there was no real readily available treatment. So what my doctors told me and my parents was that with today's technology, my family members lived between 45 and 50 years. So they said, that's probably how long you're going to live too, Bob. So I took that, well, not right away. You know, right away it was probably just like Charity had said the other day, that a difficult thing and you don't really believe it. But then I did kind of get a grasp on it. And I took that to mean that I didn't have time to put things off. So I looked at it as an expiration date, and I used that to guide my life. So I did everything I could, never put things off. I just tried to have life experiences as much as possible. That came to everything. And so, yeah, so you can, you know, my choice was to live, even though I had kidney disease, and to live as best I possibly could. So, Ashley?
Thank you for that, Bob. And I was diagnosed at a young age as well. So I was 15 and I did not take it seriously. So I don't think that I was planning very well, or I just continued to live my normal life with my parents yelling at me to be more careful. So, and I didn't really, I mean, I knew why, but I didn't take it to heart because you're 15 and you're invincible. And everything's going to be okay. So yes, I was just diagnosed with renal failure, but that wasn't going to affect me in any way. I don't think that was the best decision, obviously. I could have handled that better, but I was young and that's just the way that I went about it. When I started dialysis, and that was 5 years ago, I'm 33 now. So when I started dialysis, finally had to start dialysis, that's when I really realized that, you know, this is my life, but I'm not going to let it be my whole life because that can really consume you. And that can, you know, take you to a dark place if you let it. And so I really strongly kept doing the things that I loved. And at the time, that was hiking. I was hiking 2 to 3 times a week. And I had a friend who really encouraged me. She would go with me. She would go slowly if I needed to take my time, because there were some days that, you know, I was charging up that mountain. And then there were some days that I wasn't doing very well. You know, I was tired. My body didn't want to work, you know, as best as I wanted it to. So I had to go quite a bit slower, and she would go slow with me. So I really appreciated that about her. And it got me out, you know, it got me out in the fresh air. It got me outside. I was able to go and see amazingly beautiful things. And, you know, on my hike, I was already planning my next hike. So that really kept me going. When I go to dialysis, because I did in-center hemo, I would be on my phone looking up hikes, looking up their difficulty, and kind of planning my week. So that's what I did. And so it wasn't, my focus wasn't, I'm on dialysis, sitting in this center, poor me, you know, I wish I had a better life or whatever. It, you know, I'm dialyzing to live, so that I can go on that next hike and do the things that I love. So it was really changing my mindset. I mean, and it was taking everything seriously. So I took my diet seriously. Everything that my doctor told me to do, I did. And I was pretty good patient. I mean, they never were getting mad at me when I went to dialysis or when they got the results back from my labs. So I was doing a good job. But it really was, I think it was really important that I continued to do the things that I love to do, and I made the time for them and I made them work. So even if I had to change the way that I did it, I still was able to. And I had a really good support system of people that encouraged me to do that. I mean, at first everyone was kind of like, well, be careful, you know, are you too tired, or you think you can handle that? And I'm like, yes, I'm fine. Just let me go. But it's just because they cared, but it really did keep me positive and it got me through. So I think it's important to have those things that you love. And what about you, Don? What kept you going?
Well, I was diagnosed at 26, and this is back in the day. And there was a magic age that they could tell that you had polycystic kidneys, and that age was 26. And I've said this I don't know how many times. I don't know why 26 was a magic number, but that was the magic number. And I knew that my dad had it, and I knew that either I or one of my other two brothers would probably have it. And, you know, so before I turned 26, I refused to fall in line with, it's going to be me. Well, it was me. And come to find out, it was all three of us, actually, which is a rare thing. My two brothers and I all have polycystic kidneys. So once I got the good news there, I said to myself, I don't want to deal with it. Don't want to deal with it at all. Don't care. I'm going to live my life, and I'm just going to do. And, you know, so my dad kept talking to me about seeing a nephrologist. So I saw one nephrologist, and that nephrologist, and I didn't see eye to eye. So I found a nephrologist that I could work with. There was nothing wrong with the first nephrologist. I want to tell you that straight out. It just was a personality thing between me and him. And so, you know, I started taking it a little more serious and a little more serious. And then when I started dialysis, I told myself, I have to fight. I have to fight to stay alive. Well, I fought. I fought the diet. I fought the liquid. I fought the machine. I fought the techs, you know, because I had to fight. Well, And you know what the definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result. You're not doing yourself any good if the results don't change. So I had to, after doing this for 9 months, I had to realize that I needed to embrace what I was fighting. I needed to embrace the machine, the diet, the tax. They were all there for my own benefit and my own well-being. But, I had to do it. I had to learn to embrace it. And so the first thing I embraced was the kidney machine, the very thing that kept me alive. And so I came into dialysis after having this light bulb moment, and I asked the nurse if I could hug the kidney machine. And she said, you want to do what? I said, I got to embrace this thing. I got to like it. It's keeping me alive. I've got to find a way to do it. And I need to hug the kidney machine if I can. And she said, okay. And I hugged that kidney machine every time till I learned to love what it did for me. And then I took my diet one thing at a time. I took the techs, I had to do one thing at a time. I had to get it done one at a time. And it wasn't easy for me, but that's how I had to do it. I had to learn to live and realize what it was that was giving me life. And at that point, I wanted to live and do things, and I had to realize I had to go through dialysis. So I dialyzed to live instead of living to dialyze. Now, too many people go on dialysis and even before dialysis, but they end up on dialysis and their whole life is planned around visiting doctors and dialysis. And you know, there's more to life than that. And so if I could encourage anybody out there to set your appointments with your doctors, and so you have time to live your life. Set your point, your dialysis with those appointments, so you can get out and do the things that you need to do for you to be you. You can still do them. You might have to do them differently, but you can still do them. And so, I had to learn to be responsible for myself. And so, being a kidney patient, it's too easy to take in and have everybody do for you. Well, how come you don't have your medication? Oh, my wife didn't order them. I don't have that excuse. I order my own medication, how come you're not watching your fluids? Oh, well, we had a birthday party and the kids had a whole bunch of drinks out there and I just couldn't help myself. It's not the kids' fault. Choose a smaller glass and only have one.
Fill that glass full of ice so you only have so much fluid.
Exactly. And so we need to be responsible for ourselves, make our own appointments, and make sure that we know what our next step is that day or next week or next month or even next year. And that's how I had to do it to take and make sure that I was living my life. How'd you do it, Bob? I mean,
well, honestly, you know, I've been listening, and Don, what you're saying is absolutely the truth. I mean, this was a guide for my life too. And what I really want to add to this was, is that my kidney failure started at 48. That's when I started dialysis. It was right on my 48th birthday, if I remember right. Yeah. Anyway, the one thing I noticed, one of the secrets to not make dialysis your life is to continue moving. I found it for my own sakes, and I've seen it now in a ton of patients that I've talked to over the years. But I continued working full-time all through kidney failure, through transplant, through everything. And the secret to that was moving. I immediately when my kidneys went into failure and I started feeling really badly, you know, I really wanted to get up. Well, when I got up in the morning, I didn't feel like I could keep going. I was tired. It was hard to wake up. You know, so I wanted to call in sick every day. And this is something that a lot of patients feel. But, you know, luckily I had, I may have told you guys before, but my dad was a great role model because he's got the disease. And he just told me, he said, no, keep moving, Bob. Keep moving. And he honestly told me, he says, you know, if you stay home and you lay in bed, you're going to be sick all day. And I went, uh-huh. And he said, but if you get up and move, you're going to feel better way sooner than you think. And so, you know, a couple of days of staying home and feeling puny all day long, I decided to listen to him. And I started just pushing myself. And it would be hard to wake up. I didn't really feel like getting moving. And, you know, and there was days when I got to work, there was a couch up in the locker room where we changed clothes. And there was a couch in there at that time. They've since taken it out for obvious reasons, like employees going to sleep. But, you know, I'd get to work and I'd be changing my clothes and I'd sit down to put my shoes on and I would just nod off. And I'd catch myself. I'd wake up and I'm still putting my shoes on, getting ready to go down to the shop. But you know what? Once I got moving, in an hour or 2 hours, I felt 100%. And I was able to totally function throughout the day. My morning was just, you know, that short amount of time whenever I felt like I was a kidney patient. But after I got moving and after I got doing something, I began to feel like Bob, not the kidney patient, you know, not this poor sick guy that's going to lay on the couch all day long. So that was, honestly, you guys, that was the biggest thing I did to give myself the freedom from this disease was never stop moving. And by that, I mean, going out, working. If you're not working, going out for walks. It's taking care of the yards. It's playing with your grandkids. It's playing with your kids. You know, I mean, kidney disease affects everybody. But the minute we as kidney patients stop, the minute that we just sit down in a chair and say, I give up, this is too hard, then it is too hard. It is. So please, yeah, the keep moving. And one thing that Don said too that's vitally important is we as patients are responsible for ourselves. And that means everything. That means, like you said, your doctor's appointments, your medications, your diet. You're right, Don. And in so many classes that we at the Road Back to Life do with the kidney centers, the patient says, well, it's not my fault. My wife doesn't know how to cook. Yeah, well, you don't either, so you need to learn. You know, I mean, you know, like I tell these people that say that, I say, you know what? It's not their responsibility. It's ours. It's ours. Because, you know, if they cook wrong and something goes horribly wrong, they're going to get up the next day and it's going to be bad. It's going to be a horrible thing, but they're going to get up the next day and they're going to be able to continue on. You may not. So it's your responsibility to take care of yourself. And that also gives us the license to live our lives. Once we take control, then we feel better about ourselves. Yeah. All right, Don.
Well, the other thing is that sometimes in the support group meetings and the education meetings, the wife would come. The husband would send a wife. The husband's a patient, but the husband would send a wife, and she's there taking notes. And then, you know, I would notice it, and I would go, Are you the husband is? Well, where is he? I didn't feel like coming. I said, why don't you just go home? And she said, well, how's he going to find out? And I said, look, truth of the matter is, you can take all the notes you can take in the whole wide world. And when this all starts and something doesn't go right, like he thought he heard you tell him, you're going to be the bad guy. He needs to be here. He's the patient. He needs to find this out for himself. There's no amount of notes that's going to get you off the hook if something doesn't go right like he thinks it should. And so you just might as well go home and throw the notes away and just say, hey, you know, this is your disease. You need to get down there and you need to deal with it. Well, how do I tell him that? And I said, just like that. And it's kind of the way it is. If you're not willing to deal with it and you want to send somebody else to carry your baggage, you're doing it all wrong. You're doing it all wrong. How'd you get through this, Ashley?
Well, kind of like what Bob was saying, just keep moving. I mean, even I remember, you know, working full time and being at work, and I remember my boss saying, I can't imagine what you're going to be like once you get your transplant, because you don't ever stop. Like, you're just going to be on fire, because I just am a go, go, go type of person. I will say that kidney failure, it caused me to slow down a little bit because I was tired. I wasn't sleeping very well at night. That was one of my symptoms. I wasn't able to stay asleep, so I don't feel like I was getting really good solid sleep like I am now. And so I was tired, like Bob had said, especially in the mornings, but just getting up and getting going really helped. Just get moving. So I think that made a really big difference. I didn't ever really have an issue with someone or like my husband doing everything for me. I've always been the person who does everything. So I really took charge. I actually didn't really let people help me in any way. I should have let people help me more, and not in a sense where they were doing anything for me, but that they could be there with me. I wanted to deal with it myself. I was the patient. I didn't want to be a burden on anyone. And so I definitely took care of all my medications. I was in control of my diet. I was going to my doctor's appointments. I was asking the questions. I was taking the notes. I was definitely in charge of my disease, but I should have let people at least be there for support and opened up with them more if I needed them. I could also see where that could be easy to be a caretaker, and you care so much about someone that you want to take over because you feel like you're helping. I could see where I would do that if, you know, if I were to switch places with my husband, if he was the patient and, you know, I was his caretaker, because I would want to be helping. But you really do have to leave it up to the patient when it comes to those types of things. I mean, they need to be responsible for their medications and their diet, and they need to understand this disease so that they can take responsibility for it. I mean, definitely be there for support and help, but you can't take over. I could see myself being one of those people though, you know, like, I'm going to make you better. I'm going to help you fight this. But yeah, I mean, that can get people into trouble. They really need to, you know, take responsibility for their disease. But yeah, I never had that issue. I was definitely the responsible one. So, but yeah, just keep moving, like Bob said. I think that made a big difference. And but I mean, I think that it's easy sometimes for a lot of patients to kind of dwell on their kidney failure and feel like their life is falling apart. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. And it can affect a lot of aspects of your life. So Don, how did you deal with that? How did you deal with not letting kidney failure take over your life and not just dwelling on it every day and kind of throwing, you know, like a pity party for yourself.
Well, I did throw a pity party for myself when I first started. Nobody wanted to join me, though, and I was awful lonesome. But we're going to tackle that on our next show here, part two of this, not planning your life around kidney failure and dialysis. So please, stay tuned, look us up, and hear part two, because we're going to answer that question, how not to dwell on your kidney failure and worry about your life falling apart. It's not an easy thing. It's one of those situations where you don't have control anymore of your life, and you got to figure out, how do I get that control back? And so we'll be tackling that. And, in this day and age, there's a lot of technology out there, and things have gotten easier over the years. And the people that first started dialysis at the University of Washington actually spent 12, 13 hours a day there. Now dialysis, depending, you can do it at home or you can go to a center, and depending on what your doctor prescribes for you. But the average is about 4 hours, and it's 3 days a week, or if you do peritoneal, it's oftentimes people do it at night while they're sleeping. And, so the technology is there, so you can still have a life. And we're going to talk about the other part here. And so please stay tuned. And remember, always be kind to one another. We hope this week's show has provided you with valuable information and inspiration you can apply to your life. Keep in mind, anything said on this show is for educational purposes only. As always, we encourage you to write down your questions and take them with you to your healthcare provider. If you have any questions for us or would like to talk to one of our mentors at The Road Back to Life, please feel free to email us at mail@theroadbacktolife.com, and we'll be happy to assist you. Now be kind to one another.